Eye on the Arctic, Views from the North, I'm Elise Quinn. So at the end of each year, we typically check in with our Arctic experts for their view on the Arctic news the year before. But this year, we're doing something a little differently. Of course, we're going to look back at 2019 briefly, but this year we wanted to look ahead, checking in with our Arctic experts to see what we should be watching for everything in terms of Arctic news in 2020. So to kick things off today, I'm joined by Mia Bennett. Mia Bennett, hello.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm wonderful. So thank you so much for joining us this year to sort of give all of our Eye on the Arctic listeners and readers a sense of what we should be watching for in the year coming up. And why don't we start with sort of one of the big areas in Arctic news in terms of politics? What do you think we should be watching for in this coming months?
Yeah, I think there's a lot in stock for this year. In terms of politics, probably one issue that I'm most interested in seeing play out would be the opening of the U.S. consulate in Nuuk in Greenland. I think that's planned for later this year. The consulate was approved finally by Copenhagen just last month. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see whether once it's open, if the kind of American diplomats on the ground really have a game plan for engaging Greenland, both politically and economically, or whether the consulate ends up kind of being more of a symbolic outpost. I think a lot of eyes will be on this consulate, given, of course, all the furor surrounding Trump's tweet about Greenland last summer.
And it was interesting, you know, sort of what we've seen if we look at sort of social media online, because there was a lot of sort of a sense that when Trump assumed the presidency, that the Arctic wasn't really an interest for him. How do we understand this interest in Greenland?
Yeah, that's a really good question, you know, and honestly, it is impossible to know whether his interest was something fleeting, you know, a kind of just firing away with his thumbs on the phone, or whether he does have a kind of longer term interest, strategic interest on behalf of the U.S. in Greenland. So it's hard to read into that, but I think maybe his tweet does speak to a broader interest, at least in the State Department, in having a more solid presence, not only in Copenhagen, but in Nuuk as well, not just to present or project U.S. power, but also perhaps to counter the power of other countries, be it China, for instance.
And do you think that there's any political issue or story that we should be keeping our eye on in terms of Asian interest in the Arctic?
Yeah, let's see. In terms of Asian interests, I think there's a number of interesting scientific meetings that will be happening this year in Japan. There's the Arctic Science Summit Week that's happening, I believe, in Japan. And then later in the year, there will be the Arctic Circle in Tokyo. So there's going to be a lot of kind of, I think, interest in Japan and stepping up its Arctic game, particularly as the last year has seen a lot of interest in China. China recently launched its second icebreaker, so that will probably be engaged in various kind of missions this year. So it'll be interesting to see how all of these building interests among Asian countries, which now are, you know, many, many years in the works, kind of play out in this new decade.
And so let's shift gears now to the environment. Always a huge issue when we're looking at the Arctic in whatever region of the North we're looking at. What are some of the environmental stories or issues that you're going to be watching for in 2020?
Let's see. I think one that comes to mind would be discussions regarding black carbon in the Arctic. Of course, climate change is always kind of there as a major issue, but I think black carbon is a specific issue that might have been a little bit overlooked. So in terms of its role with regard to climate change in the Arctic, so the black carbon, also known as soot, this is a kind of particulate matter that comes really mostly in the Arctic, at least from burning fossil fuels, namely heavy fuel oil. So this is a type of fuel that's used for lots of ships in the Arctic, from cargo ships to fishing ships to even cruise vessels still. And black carbon is really problematic because it's able to trap a lot more heat than carbon dioxide, so it has potentially a very negative impact on the Arctic environment.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say that was also a real focus of the last Finnish chairmanship.
Exactly, yeah. So you bring up a good point, which is that the Finnish chairmanship has kind of made black carbon, or had made black carbon a, a real kind of target of its efforts to improve the environment in the Arctic. And many other countries also support controlling black carbon, including the U.S. and other Nordic countries. But it's Russia and Canada that really aren't quite as on board with limiting black carbon emissions from ships, partly because their ships still use so much heavy fuel oil, which is the cheapest way to move ships up north. And the IMO, the International Maritime Organization, which coincidentally joined the Arctic Council as an observer during the Finnish chairmanship, the IMO recognizes the damaging effects of heavy fuel oil in the polar regions, having banned its use in Antarctica. But it still hasn't done so in the Arctic, and I think there's perhaps movement in the IMO towards doing so that we could see coalesce this year, but still I think there needs to be a lot more done in that area.
So there's a lot to keep our eye on in the 12 months ahead. But let's take just a peek back on 2019. You know, part of these conversations that our listeners, you know, usually enjoy hugely is to know sort of what the Arctic experts think was overlooked in 2019. From your vantage point, what was your pick? And, you know, what do you wish got maybe more attention?
Yeah, it's always a great question. It's always hard to choose, you know, which story was the most overlooked, especially as I think coverage of Arctic stories has really improved dramatically in recent years with a lot more outlets and sources and the very diverse coverage that goes far beyond climate change, I would say. But if I were to choose one story, actually one that was really intriguing to me, I came across in the New York Times just the other day, and it was a story of an alleged Norwegian spy who was arrested in Moscow a couple of years ago and now has recently been released in a sort of prisoner exchange. And so I think this story was fascinating because so this was an individual named Frode Berg who, you know, this story has been covered in some of the Arctic outlets, but I think it really encapsulates the fact that this individual who lived in Kirkenes in North Norway on the border with Russia, and who was basically asked by the Norwegian government from what he says to go to Moscow and deliver envelopes and SD cards. It kind of shows how these, you know, just residents living along the border can matter just as much in Arctic geopolitics as really big names like Donald Trump with his tweet about Greenland, to circle back to that. So while that story, I would say, was the most, you know, generated the most headlines, I think the story of a kind of, you know, 60-year-old Norwegian resident who gets wrapped up in Moscow espionage, that really represents how Arctic geopolitics can work on the ground rather than just, you know, in the virtual world of Twitter, I think, and the consequences it has for bilateral relations, in fact.
So a lot to keep our eye on. Always a pleasure to speak with you, Mia Bennett, and we look forward to keeping up with your views on the Arctic through your blog Cryopolitics that also appears on Eye on the Arctic and having conversations with you in the year ahead. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Elise. My pleasure. Have a good day.